Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Lakers Collective. I'm Trevor Lane. He's Pete Zayas. Jovan Buhar, it's his turn to be on vacation on this episode. Happy to have you all here. If you haven't done so yet, please make sure you hit the subscribe button. Turn on those notifications as well. Follow us over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. Pete, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well. Welcome back. We missed you, man. I want to hear all about the cruise, on the sea content from you was phenomenal on so many levels, man. Want to hear all about it. Where did you go? What was the, how was it?
It was phenomenal. Excellent. We went on celebrity cruises. We went on the Celebrity Beyond. We went to Tortola, St. Kitts and Puerto Plata, and it was absolutely beautiful. So much fun. I'll tell you what though, I have never been more appreciative for land-based Wi-Fi than I am. It took so long to upload anything from the ship itself, but and live streaming completely out of the question, would have never held up at all. So happy to be back in action, but it was very restful. I ate way too much, drank way too much too, but had a really, really good time. It was an absolute blast. So I'm rested up now and ready to dive back into things.
Awesome, man. We missed you and got some big news while you were gone. What do you think about LeBron to Philly?
That tends to be, Pete, that's what it takes.
I
go on vacation and that's when NBA news breaks. I'm at a point where I'm going to have to start taking one for the team. Whenever things get slow, I'm just going to need to go somewhere. And that way something will happen. But yeah, LeBron winds up going to the Philadelphia 76ers. I don't know, Pete, I feel like this is kind of a weird situation to a degree for Lakers fans because we knew he was leaving, right? And so we already experienced that. That was, you know, the end of June, beginning of July, we found out LeBron is not coming back to the Lakers. Now it's like you kind of go through it all over again in a way, now that he's actually picked the Philadelphia 76ers.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a certain level of closure to that. And even after, you know, it happening a little bit later in the offseason, even you, I saw a post from you on this. It was like, man, sure would be great to have LeBron James on this version of the Lakers that was certainly wish casting on all of our end. But had when he hadn't picked a team by that point, you know, it was like, is there any chance? But him going to Philly, bit of a surprise, too. I thought, you know, Miami and Cleveland were ahead of them. But what was your take on that? Like that came out a bit out of nowhere for me. What do you think about the fit there?
Yeah, I thought basketball wise, it was a great fit. I thought arguably basketball wise, it was right up there with Minnesota in terms of the best fits, I thought, because he just instantly slides into that starting power forward spot in Philly, just as he would in Minnesota. A little bit more of a questionable fit in Cleveland or perhaps in Miami, right? I would trust LeBron to figure it out and make things work wherever he wound up. But I do think the fit is great in terms of just sliding right into that power forward spot. I do have some questions about what the perimeter defense is going to look like there in Philly. Is Jaylen Brown really going to buy into that defensive stopper role? That's a question. Almost reminds me a little bit if we think of, for some reason the year is escaping me, but Kobe with the Olympic team, right? When they had LeBron and Wade and Kobe just said, we've got guys who can score. I'm going to be that wing stopper. I'm going to be that level player. I think Jaylen Brown is going to have to accept that type of a role on this team. Not that he's not going to score, but a little bit ironic considering that he was in Boston, seemingly so happy to be the number one option for part of the year, at least while Jason Tatum was out. And now I think he's going to be slotted down a few notches in terms of where he is in the hierarchy of the offense. But nonetheless, very, very talented team. I'm very excited to see Tyrese Maxey not have to have quite as much of a burden on him to create everything for that club. Haven't seen him play 40-plus minutes a night. I'm hoping that that's going to come down and absolutely should. This is a team with great depth. They've got guys like Anthony Simons, now our old friend Kentavious Caldwell-Pope coming in there as well. They've got LeBaron Fylon coming in, the rookie. I think they've got some really interesting pieces. And I think ultimately that's what it came down to for LeBron. It's about basketball, and that's what brought him to Philly, is his potential fit with this group. I'm expecting, Pete, some bumps in the road here where they're going to have to sort things out. You've got guys who are very used to a high usage rate, and so how they navigate that'll be interesting. I think it will take some time, but I ultimately think this Philly team can be very, very good and could potentially ultimately pay off for LeBron and win him another championship.
Tons of high level talent. I think LeBron really values that like top end of the roster. And I'm a big, like, what's your closing five guy. And, you know, if VJ Edgecombe is your fifth best player, that's a really, really good team. I also have questions about the defense. I think their playoff top level defense will be pretty good. But the 82 game possession to possession, it's gonna take some reps, Trevor. They can't be a team that has 2-3 guys out of their main guys in any given time. They can survive that, certainly, that they got enough shot creation to do that. But to figure out that just guys, I saw a tweet from Dean Oliver that was like the usage percentage of the five starters added up to like 142%. There's always going to be a certain level of just, you got to play together to really reach their peak. But yeah, going to be an interesting fit. And from a Lakers perspective, it's weird. You know, Philly posted the jersey, the 23 James.
It looks funny.
It looks so strange. It's so strange. And so all of that's going to, but I think it's good for everybody to move on. You know, I've got nothing but love for Bron, and I hope he does well in Philly. And anytime, you know, you can make Boston's life more difficult, I'm all for that. And I think that, you know, Philly, they've had quite an offseason.
What an incredible what if that is now. What if Boston actually traded for Giannis? The domino effect so far has been absolutely insane. Jaylen Brown in Philly means LeBron in Philly. Mm-hmm. So much has shifted with this, but I'm in agreement. I have no ill will towards LeBron whatsoever. I hope things go great for him in Philly, unless they're playing the Lakers. If they're playing the Lakers, I hope they're totally awful and they lose and the Lakers win. Otherwise, you know, I wish him the best and hope it all goes well there. But, you know, Pete, one of the things that I've been thinking about with this is we look at this Lakers summer, and I think, and we'll talk about this in a little while, but I think there are a few key things that the Lakers can do that would really bump them up to that next level if they can accomplish them this summer. But from a Lakers perspective, one of the things, as much as I'm liking the signings they've made, everybody knows I've had my concerns about some of the contracts. LeBron is perhaps not the icing on the cake, but I mean, this is yet another player that has left the Lakers and signed what I believe to be a below market value deal, or at least a deal where you're like, oh damn, that team got a steal. We think about Marcus Smart's deal. We think about Rui's deal, Luke Kennard. All these players that have left the Lakers have signed contracts that I think if they had signed those deals with the Lakers, we would have been pretty excited about the value. How do you feel about that? Does that put a damper on your spirits at all in terms of the Lakers side of things? Or is that just, it's just what, once the guy is gone, the guy's gone. And I'm not going to worry too much about what they sign with another team.
No, it's an interesting framing it to a certain degree, but I think that more broadly speaking, it speaks to the degree that you pay for youth in this league. And all of those guys, even Rui turns 29 this year. It's crazy to think, but all of those guys, you know, they're on shorter term deals where the money isn't as much. I put LeBron a little bit to the side because it's such a unique circumstance and he waited. So like everybody knows he's worth way, way more than what he's going to end up getting paid. But with the other ones, I think that, you know, Marcus turns 33 midseason, Rui 29. Who am I missing in that?
Kennard's
going to be 31. Mm-hmm. Yep. And so all of the Lakers signings, you know, Mama was the oldest at 27. Same with Sexton, but Kessler just turned 25 yesterday, I believe. And so I think that what the Lakers set out to do for this offseason is build something sustainably competitive over the next few years where they're adding pieces to this. And so I just think that's the price of youth and athleticism.
Yeah, I agree. I think that it does take some... Now, the years, the player options, there's things that we can quibble over, but the idea is that this is going to be a team that they can put the pieces together now and have this team grow together over these next few seasons. And ideally catch lightning in a bottle and come out of the gates firing and be off and running. And hopefully that is the world that we're living in. But the idea is that you're going to be able to build with something and not just constantly shuffling through players year in, year out. You're going to make some more moves around the edges. They've committed to Quentin Grimes. They've committed to Sandro Mamukelashvili, committed to Walker Kessler, obviously, right? Adding in these players as now core pieces for this team moving forward. So that's what they're doing, and there is a premium you have to pay in order to do that. I also look at how quickly these guys were taken off the market, and I think that also the Walker Kessler factor in this has to be acknowledged, where the Lakers were negotiating with Walker Kessler, and you had to promise something to Quentin Grimes. You had to promise something to Mamukelashvili to get those guys to not go listen to other offers, right, while you're negotiating that Walker Kessler deal and getting that done. So all of that has value. The youth, the weight that you were asking for from these guys, there's a reason why after the Walker Kessler deal went down, it was boom, boom, boom. Lakers are signing Quentin Grimes. Lakers are signing Sandro Mamukelashvili, and so on. So I think all of that comes at a price. But ultimately, the Lakers are committing to the guys that they believe are going to be part of the team moving forward. And as I've continued to stress, as much as I may not be a huge fan of the contracts themselves or the player options or things like that, if the Lakers are right in their analysis with these guys, right, no one's going to care. None of it matters whatsoever as long as they're right.
It's such an interesting difference, too, between LeBron going to Philly and that. I was just talking about like that closing five type of idea. The biggest contract right now coming up this year is Quentin Grimes starts at 13 point something this season. And that's not really starter money. That's like borderline, you know, sixth man, seventh man type of money on most teams. And so LeBron goes the give me the top end talent type of route. The Lakers go, let's get one solid starter that's going to be really part of the core going forward in Kessler. And then a bunch of signings. I would even throw Kuminga into this that are sort of like bench guy, like they're really good bench guys, but they're not, you know, written in stone type of starters. So it's just interesting difference in approach.
Yeah, it really is. It's a bit of a shift for the Lakers as well. When we think about what the Lakers have done historically, they've very much been the, we're going to be the top heavy team. Give us the two or three, ideally three best players, and the rest of it will figure itself out naturally. That's not really the NBA that we're in anymore. Philly certainly has plenty of depth, no question. But when we look at what the Lakers have done, they're trying to build out a team with some type of depth. I do agree there's some questions about what the starting lineup is ultimately going to look like, and they're going to have to figure that out as we move forward here. And hopefully there are some other pieces coming. And I think that's probably where I want to go next, is talk a little bit about where the Lakers need to go from here before we really dive fully into the chat. But first, I want to give a shout out to our sponsor, and that is Prize Picks. You guys can check them out. Use the link in the description down below. They've got a great deal going on right now. The code, it's HMA. If you're a new user to Prize Picks, play $5, get $150 if you win. So again, that code is HMA. Play $5, get $150 if you win in your lineup. Super easy. All you got to do is pick more or less on some of your favorite players. I said George Kirby, more than 3.5 strikeouts. That's the other thing you can do. You can actually mix and match sports here. So Nafisa Collier, I went 8.5 rebounds and assists. I said she'll get more than that. And one of the things I love too, in terms of research, boom, shows you right there. She's done it in 4 of her last 5 games. So I'm going to lean into that more than 8.5 rebounds and assists for Nafisa Collier. If you guys want to get in on it, use that code HMA. And again, the link is in the description. Play $5, get $150 if you win. All right, let's go here. Pete, when I look at this Lakers roster right now, LeBron is gone. A number of players are gone. I'm really intrigued by the drive and kick ability of this club, their ability to get into the paint, but I still feel like this club is lacking a few key things. Obviously, they need a wing. They need a starting caliber wing that you put in there. Whether we nominally want to call that player the three, the four, you need somebody that defensively is going to take the more difficult wing assignment. Quentin Grimes is going to be more that point of attack guy. You got to check that box. I also think they could use another big, and I know the name Musa Diabate has been out there a little bit. I love Musa Diabate, what he did with the Hornets, but a lob threat big ideally would be great, whether it's a Daniel Gafford. I don't know if they can check all those boxes right now, but Pete, where I'm actually sitting, you can tell me where you're at, but where I'm at right now is if they could at least land that starting level wing, I would feel way more optimistic about this roster as they presently sit in terms of day one start of the regular season.
It would slot everybody into just way more appropriate roles than if you don't have that. And sadly, your trip did not shake free anything on the Jonathan Kuminga front. We might have to send you off again. I'm moving to Florida on Friday. Maybe that's what it'll do. And so we'll see if that gets any resolution. But we did see Spencer Jones sign an offer sheet with OKC and then Denver subsequently matching, but that pushes them over the second apron. And that's why I brought up last week while you were gone, the idea of Cameron Johnson. And if the Lakers could get in on that, they're one of the teams that, not the only one, I think other teams would be in on Johnson, but one of the benefits that the Lakers could provide Denver is that since the Lakers are under the first apron, Boba's going crazy back there. Sorry.
Does not like the idea of Cam Johnson.
Not a Cam Johnson fan. Yes. One of the things, they can take back more money than they send out. And so they could save Denver a decent amount of money in what they send out. I do think a third team would be ideal there, but those are the two that are sort of in mind for me more than PJ Washington. I know we've talked a decent amount about him, but that's kind of where my eyes are right now, is the resolution of the Kuminga situation, which I think like PJ Washington and just the RFAs in general, I don't know if we're going to get a resolution on that anytime soon, but that to me is, I think, the spot that where the Lakers are looking are between Johnson and Kuminga. So hopefully we get something on that. But what are your thoughts on Cameron Johnson? We haven't talked about him a whole lot.
Yeah, you know, I like Cameron Johnson in terms of the three-point shooting, the ability to be that, you know, over the years. He's been a steady three-point shooter. I've got a little bit of concern about the lateral quickness that he brings. You know, he's a willing defender, can sometimes even be a bit of a weak side shot blocker at times. Mm-hmm. And so there could be some utility in that. Obviously a very long and lanky player. I know we tend to think on a Luka and Austin Reeves base, everybody needs to be uber athletic, and that's going to push you more towards Jonathan Kuminga. But I also think that some of the mistakes that Jonathan Kuminga will make out there on the floor that sometimes his athleticism can make up for, I tend to look at Cam Johnson as being more of a low mistake player than Kuminga will be. And I do think that as people who have watched Rui Hachimura over the years, you make no mistake, love Rui Hachimura, wish he was still a Laker, but he made a lot of mistakes off ball with his reads and things of that nature. I think you are getting a little bit more of that with Kuminga. So that would certainly be the benefit of going with somebody like Cam Johnson, more somebody you can just slot in and you can trust that there may be some moments where athletically you're hoping for a bit more out of him, but at least he's going to make the right reads the majority of the time and certainly provide that floor spacing on the offensive end. That being said, Pete, I think if I had to pick between the two, I think I would lean more into the upside of Jonathan Kuminga.
Interesting.
I see, and I'm not a Jonathan Kuminga.
That's what I'm saying. I'm surprised to hear that from you. Yeah.
It's because when I'm looking at this roster, and I like Cam Johnson a lot, I keep falling back on, man, I really don't want to see Sandro Mamukelashvili pushed into a starting power forward job, and then it's Luka and Mamu, and one of those guys has to deal with the other team's best wing scorer, right? Yeah. I also don't necessarily want Cam Johnson to be that guy. I've got more confidence. If my number one goal for that slot is I want a player that they need to, somebody's trying to break them down one-on-one, they can stay in front and make a play. I've got more confidence in Jonathan Kuminga to do that than Cam Johnson. So that's why I lean that way. But again, it feels strange for me to be in that spot because I'm not necessarily a big Jonathan Kuminga guy either.
Yeah, I was a little surprised to hear you say that. And that's the direction I fall as well for the same reasons. In addition, we don't know what Kuminga's contract would be, but say he's at 15 to start with, 16 to start with, something like that. I think that depending on if they move Vando or not, that's one of the things I'm fascinated about because that's been some of the rumors is that Vando would be included. But I think if you're able to get Kuminga in a sign and trade, one of the things the Lakers could offer is taking back Buddy Hield, because I think from what I understand, Atlanta kind of wants to stay below a luxury tax threshold, that you could have a decent amount of expiring contracts if you're the Lakers at the deadline, if you get Hield back along with Hardy. And you could send out, I think, Vando and Dalton for Kuminga and Buddy. And, you know what I'm saying? And then at the trade deadline, you've got Jake, Hardy, and Buddy adding up to what's that, $21 million or so in expiring contracts. And we're on our way. Like, one of the things I've mentioned is that the Lakers' goal from now until the next trade deadline, not this one coming up, but the one after that, is to get as up against the second apron as they can, like build the team by then. But if, like, ideally you do that sooner. I don't want to wait a year and a half for that deadline, right? And so if you can get out of Vando, you got some expiring deals at the deadline. The one pushback against that is Lakers are capped at the first apron because of the sign and trade for Kessler. And so they can't get all the way there. And, you know, we'll see what happens with ideally preserving the non-taxpayer MLE. But point being is that they can do most of their work on the front end, I think, to be able to get there. And then this summer sort of push up against that second apron. So the team building aspect of Kuminga, I think, would make a little bit less than what Johnson would make this year. Then you combine that with the fact that he's 23. I just think that the overall talent that you could add would add up to a little bit more.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Now, that's interesting, though, the going after Buddy Hield in addition. And if you're to package Dalton Connect, I still look at this. You know, I've got a video that's going to come out on Lakers Nation in a few hours, right? I had Keith Smith. He and I were just chatting on the front office show an hour or so ago. That video is uploading right now. But he was mentioning again that, you know, he's heard Atlanta might be willing to take back Vando in the right scenario. They have to clear roster spots and things like that. But I'd still look at this situation and just think it's probably going to wind up, if Kuminga winds up going to LA, probably going to need to wind up a three-team deal or something with at least some salary going somewhere else. Who knows? Maybe it's Memphis, maybe it's Charlotte, somebody like that ultimately takes on salary. But where what are you willing to do in order to get Jonathan Kuminga on the Lakers? Like, what draft capital wise are you willing to give up? Because certainly Atlanta, they're not going to take back Jared Vanderbilt out of the kindness of their hearts. Are you willing to do that final pick swap, or would you try to put a line and say, no, we're just going to do some of our second rounders or something like that? Where do you ultimately land with that?
I would do the pick swap. I'm curious where in the hierarchy pick swaps rank versus like 3 seconds. Do you think that a pick swap of a first has more value, especially with the new rules, right? In terms of the draft lottery, that might be a thing that pushes it overhead. But I do think that, you know, giving up, because getting out of Vando now allows you to build that team sooner rather than waiting for his value to convey at the 28 deadline when he's an expiring contract, I do think that's worth something. Now, what that is, and it also factors in, like, what is the contract that Kuminga is going to sign? Because the higher that number gets, then the less flexibility the Lakers will have this next summer to sort of add to that. So I'm curious, just all of that from your perspective, like, where do pick swaps rank in the overall hierarchy of, like, draft compensation that gets sent out? Is that more valuable than, say, our 3 tradable seconds?
I'd have them pretty even. 3 second rounders, one pick swap, because of the new rules, right? If it wasn't new rules, I'd probably say like 2 seconds is a pick swap. But now I think pick swaps are more valuable than ever, because you don't need the team that you have a pick swap for to be awful in order for the pick to pay off in a big, big way. They could have the 9th worst record in the NBA, and it's not, oh, well, shoot, we have hardly any chance. No, you've got a pretty decent shot at moving up and winding up with a really, really good pick. So I do think pick swaps have more value. If I'm the Lakers, I'd also be very careful with that, because that's probably their biggest, like, bang for your buck type of asset that you have remaining. So you got to be careful if that's what you're giving up for Jonathan Kuminga. But, you know, Keith was just telling me that the sticking point right now is what Kuminga wants on his next salary. And part of the problem is, if you sign and trade for a player, you have to give him 3 years. And so if it's a 3-year deal, Kuminga is saying, well, I'd rather do, if I'm not getting the money I want, then I only want a 1-year deal so I can get out and get the money that I want next year. But if he's going to do a 3-year deal, I think he's going to want, this is just my speculation here, but I think he's going to want more in the lines of like $20 million per year. I also think if you're the Lakers and you're going after Kuminga like that, you're essentially committing the starting job to him, and you've got to commit that plus the money. My thing is this, Pete, I keep coming back to this. Jonathan Kuminga needs to understand the opportunity that is in front of him. He's been wanting to start somewhere, whether it was Golden State, Atlanta, right? He wants to get that opportunity to show what he really is as a player, and he's been wanting to cash out. And certainly, I think he's made a few mistakes in the way that he's evaluated his market over the years. But you're not going to get a better opportunity than the Lakers starting next to Luka. I know the Cavs have interest. Would he even start there? I don't know. He may not. The Lakers can offer him a clear starting job, the Hollywood spotlight. What he has to sacrifice is maybe a little bit, not a lot, but a little bit off of that contract, and be willing to sign up for 3 years rather than do a 1-year deal again and then try to cash in on his next market. And I think that in the long run, if he goes to LA and he plays right and he's able to really hit and solidify that starting job, he's going to make that money back. Whatever he feels like he's losing right now, he would make that back in the long run many times over by being in that Lakers spotlight and being given this starting opportunity. And that's part of why I think the Lakers are looking at this situation and saying, you know what? We don't have to go crazy here. We know we have the best opportunity for Jonathan Kuminga, and we're going to take our time and let him kind of realize that and come to that ultimate conclusion. But I do really think that the Lakers are the best spot for Jonathan Kuminga. I do think he would help the Lakers quite a bit. I'd feel much better about this team with him on the roster. How much are they going to commit to him? I think how much is he going to commit to them is really the question that needs to be asked, because this is a big opportunity that's in front of him here.
Yeah, no doubt. And I'm curious what his alternatives are. And I think that that's somewhat the Lakers' position, is it's not a like, not an, oh yeah, we'll go find something better. It doesn't have, I think, attitude behind it, but when you're talking about that starting role and like, who the heck's going to give him that $20 million that he wants? There's nobody out there that really has both that. And even a team like Milwaukee, they've got several forwards on their team that are all in that sort of like, Tyler Hero's going to be gunning for his numbers. Kuz is in a contract year. They just traded for Hakez. Yep. They just drafted Nate Ament at number 10, I think it was. And so when you look around at the Cleveland thing, which had been the rumor, you know, prior to LeBron signing, like is he going to start at the three next to Mobley and Allen? That's pretty rough spacing right there. It's just a really natural fit here with the Lakers, but all it takes is one team. But I just don't know where his opportunity comes from.
Yeah, I don't see it. And that could actually benefit the Lakers. And it's where, you know, everybody right now, they want this roster to be done. And they want to be able to say, look, the Lakers have this good team, and not the Lakers got some pieces, but man, who is starting on the wing right now? Or do they have that backup five? I know everybody wants it to be done right now. Take it. They don't necessarily need to rush at this point of free agency. It's not this flurry right now of players flying off the board. If this ultimately results in Jonathan Kuminga with the Lakers on a deal that they're comfortable with, if that happens at the end of August, fine. It's the result that's the important part, not the speed at which we get to it.
Can I throw out something on the backup five spot, especially if we sign Kuminga? Kuminga played a decent amount of small ball five for the Warriors. I know we're not them, but I'm not convinced that between Kuminga, Mamu, Adu possibly getting minutes, that the Lakers aren't going to go like small ball sometimes, switch everything type of groups. That I know they would like to get a backup five, and like Diabate would be great, but I start from a like, why the heck would Charlotte want to get rid of him? Right. He's been so good for them that I just don't think the Lakers have anything to offer that would be appealing enough for them to move off of him. And so I just want to throw that out there. I wouldn't discount the Lakers being like, hey, we're going to be switchy and athletic on the perimeter and not really run a traditional five in a decent number of lineups.
Yeah, you know, I certainly think they have, it's strange to say it, but I think they have the wings to actually do that, you know, this year with the group that they're assembling. So I think there's the potential that they could play small ball. I actually thought we might have seen it a little bit more often last year than we ultimately wound up seeing that. You know, Rui Hachimura actually wasn't a bad small ball five in certain settings. Mm-hmm. Maybe they do lean into that. I do think it's a box they would like to check in terms of having one more big out there, because I just don't look at Kevon Looney and say this is a guy that's going to play every single night 15 plus minutes, anything like that. And I also think you lost Jackson Hayes. Be nice to have another lob threat for Luka. Like, you've got plenty that are going to be, you know, running off the dunker spot from the wing, and you know, are crashing from the outside. So you've got some guys like that. Adu Thiro certainly can do it. Zion Williams can do it. Cameron Carr can make the right. He's got plenty of lob threats from the wing. But in terms of a lob threat big, it would be a nice thing to have. But I do agree with you that it's probably more of a luxury at this point, whereas the starting caliber wing to me is a necessity if I were to categorize those two things. So it would be nice to eventually land that piece and be able to say, Luka, look what we did. Not only did we add all these guys for you, but we also got you this dude that's going to go catch lobs where you can throw it, you know, 15 feet above his head and he can get up and go get it. Though maybe Adu Thiro actually can get there. I wouldn't count him out on that. But it would just be a nice thing to have, where it's the wing really that I think needs to be the priority, even if that lob threat is an important one. How switchy do you think? Because we know J.J. Redick likes to lean into these switch everything lineups, or at least switch one through four. How switchy do you think he's going to be willing to be with Walker Kessler?
So I think it's going to be different with Kessler on the floor versus off. I still think we'll see a decent amount of peel-off switching from the Kessler groups. But like, if Mamu is your rim protector, if you're asking him to run drops, I don't think that's going to work out great for us. Like, same thing with Looney for different reasons. And so it may be a thing that they go to without Kessler just out of necessity. But especially if Kuminga comes aboard, one of the really essential parts of switching like that is having a front court player who can switch out and still apply pressure. That's one of the things I loved about Adu in summer league, is he was getting out on the perimeter, and it wasn't just I hope I don't get beat off the dribble. He was attacking ball handlers and getting deflections and really, you know, really pressuring. Kuminga's got some capability of that as well. And if you've got a couple of guys out like that, and then on the back line, say Matisse is switched on the back line, he's hunting for steals. Same with Zaire Williams. You can sort of, I think that becomes more and more essential. But also the points you were making earlier about Cameron Johnson and being kind of a higher IQ type of guy, I do think the Lakers defensive scheme is even more conducive toward just making the right read and understanding the new situation that just happened after the switch and kind of what needs to happen. Do I need to scram out? You know, we got Colin Sexton switched onto a bigger guy, and that's red alert danger. They're going to score. You know, the wing comes in and be like, no, go out on the perimeter. I got him now. You need guys that are able to recognize that in the moment. That guys like Johnson, I think, are, you know, super helpful in that way. But yeah, I do think that they've got some of the personnel to be able to do that. But ideally with guys like Sexton. Like Sexton's a guy that really stands out to me of a ideally we don't do that with him on the floor. And so, and we've seen the chemistry too between Sexton and Kessler. I know Sexton will come off the bench, but you know, Kessler will play with mixed groups as well, that it's probably best to play Sexton and Kessler together on those groups, but, and then have sort of like more dedicated switch everything type of groups.
Sexton reminds me a bit of, you know, Dennis Schroeder eventually developed a reputation for being a better defensive player just through his feistiness and all of that. But when Schroeder first came to the Lakers, it was, well, he tries, but he's just small. And so it doesn't tend to go very well when he's being asked to have these big defensive roles. I kind of look at Colin Sexton similarly, where he does struggle defensively. You don't want to get him switched on to certain, just because he's small. But it's not because of a lack of effort. He certainly competes. He tries on that. And just the physical limitations are what they are. And I do appreciate the scrappiness that we get from him on that side of the ball, or that we're going to see from him on that side of the ball. I just think you're right. If you are asking him to switch on anybody bigger, it's going to put him in a very disadvantaged situation. That's just really not where you want to be. But Pete, you've mentioned the last couple of minutes here. You've mentioned Adu Thiro a couple of times. How confident are you that he's going to be part of the rotation right out of the gate?
Not super confident, especially if we get a guy like Kuminga. I think he sort of stands in the way there, but I want to see him get minutes. I want to see him sort of like I thought he improved so much from the beginning of summer league to the end of it, that certain guys just need reps, Trev. Like, and he's one of those guys that his ceiling's so high too. And he brings, like, if you have a deficiency on the roster, you were talking athletically why you would lean toward Kuminga versus Johnson, in part because of what he brings to the table. When you've got a guy like Adu and you've got a deficit in athleticism, if you can turn him into an actual player, you don't solve all of your problems just because one guy can do it, but he's so athletic that it would really make a lot of other things work, including a player like Sexton, right? Like, just having more talent like that with size and athleticism on the court, you know, can help cover for guys that if we signed Kuminga, I would not guess that he would be in the rotation at the very beginning, but I would love for him to at least be the next man up. And, you know, whenever one or two guys are missing, and they almost always are these days in an 82 game season, like, go put Adu in and like, see if that pays off for you by the time February comes around.
As a guy, the one thing that we didn't see out of him in summer league was the three ball really start to come around. He still has a very flat shot. It seems not unwilling, but not super excited, let's say, about taking those threes. Is there a world where maybe he leapfrogs Vando in the hierarchy as more of a non-shooting, or at least reluctant shooting wing, but provides athleticism and defense? Like, could you see that potentially happening?
I could, because like, he at least provides, you were talking earlier about that being able to be a lob threat from the corner. One of the things that happens is Luka draws 35 feet away from the rim more than just about anybody in the league. And the sequence that happens after that defenses are really vulnerable to is the short roll pass to Kessler, and then you dive from the corner. And that's the thing about Vando, is that it's not so much that the three ball, like, we know he's not a great three-point shooter, but it's that he's also not a good finisher around the rim. And so you got to provide something that between that and then just like the long-term investment of, if a dude's good, like, he's pretty cost controlled over the next few years, that he could really benefit future versions of this team. So we'll see if Vando's on the squad or not, but like, do you see it similarly, that even if a dude's a little bit behind Vando at this point, it might be worth it long-term to invest in him?
Oh, I was saying all year last year that Adu Thiro's development was more important than the development of any other player, young player on the roster. He's more, even, you know, Bronny was getting minutes and things. Adu Thiro is more important than Bronny. Adu Thiro is more important than Dalton Connect. Simply because his skill set is one that the Lakers need so badly, with his athleticism, his ability to play on the wing as a rebounder, how many times he can just come flying in and just go up over everybody else and come away with the ball. You need guys like that on a team built around Luka Doncic. So I am all in on the giving minutes to Adu Thiro concept. I love the idea. Cameron Carr, it may usurp that role, the most important young player on the Lakers roster at this point, but Adu Thiro is still very, very much up there. I'm very high on him. I almost think, you know, there's this thing that they tell pro wrestlers when they first get in the ring the first time, right? They first make their debut in WWE, and they say, before you go out there, they say, slow down. And then when you think you've slow down again. You got to slow down even more. If Adu can just do that consistently, slow down and then slow down a little bit more, I think the game is going to come to him, and he's going to be – I think he's going to be a good one here moving forward for the Lakers. And I'm still so disappointed that the Crash nickname has already been taken by Gerald Wallace, because it fits him so perfectly.
It's funny, the slowdown idea. I don't know if you remember the first time you drove on a freeway as a teenager, but I remember the first time I did it. It was like, terrifying. My God. Yeah, right? And then eventually yeah. – but the point is, you need reps, right? Like, after a certain amount of time, the freeway is the freeway. It's no different. You're not – you know, bothered by it at all, but you got to be able to actually get those minutes. And so just early season reps for a dude. Let's go.
All right, let's get into our chat. We're going to take some of their questions and comments. First, we're going to give a quick shout out to our sponsor, and that is SeatGeek.
So I'm moving to Florida in a few weeks, and a couple of weeks after that, it's my girlfriend's birthday. She loves live music, so I want to take her to a concert, but I've never been to any of the venues out there. Which is why I want to give the sponsor of today's video, SeatGeek, a huge shout out. With over 35 million downloads, SeatGeek is the number one rated ticketing app. There are more than 70,000 events listed on SeatGeek, including concerts, sports, festivals, and more. Major League Baseball is in full swing, and you can now get World Cup tickets on SeatGeek. SeatGeek has a great feature that rates these tickets on a scale of 1 to 10, with the green meaning that it's a better deal, and the red meaning that it's a worse one. This helps me out a ton looking for the best tickets at venues I've never been to before. Plus, every ticket is backed by the buyer guarantee. And of course, I have a code for you guys. You can use COLLECTIVE10 for 10% off your next set of tickets at SeatGeek. That's 10% off any tickets with the promo code COLLECTIVE10. Make sure to click the link in the description to download the app and have the code automatically added to your account so you can use it later. Thank you to SeatGeek.
All right. Again, big shout out to SeatGeek. The chat is loving your read there.
Oh, and...
oh no.
A whole new world for me.
Look at the first question that came in, our first comment. Wow, Trev, welcome back. Did your vacation come with a player option? LOL. did it come with a player option? It came with a drinking option. I can tell you that for sure.
That you exercised. Yeah.
Yep. I definitely took advantage of that. That's for sure. Let's go here. Ty said one thing not talked about is Kuminga's ability to draw fouls with Luka, Reeves, Kuminga, likely top free throw shooting team. You know, I think that's a great mention here, that Jonathan Kuminga's foul drawing ability is impressive. What's interesting though, is PDC does it in a different way than Luka or Austin do. Jonathan Kuminga typically does it by closing space very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. He gets from point A to point B, I think a lot of times faster than the defense is really prepared for, and that winds up getting him to the free throw line by getting guys off balance that way. Whereas Austin and Luka, it's a bit more about craft. It's a bit more about footwork, getting guys off balance and then attacking those weaknesses and then able to draw fouls through that situation. So first of all, there's a difference between the two styles. Is there an advantage to having two different styles of foul drawing skills on the team?
I love this point. Yes, very much so. And I would add to your point saying he often does it from different places, right? Whereas Luka and Austin are often in the middle of the court. Kuminga can do that from the wing and below, while also having the capability at the top of the key. But that's one thing that I know was really on the Lakers' mind in terms of replacing LeBron functionally is they knew we'd lose a good amount of pressure on the rim. And one of their focuses this summer is being able to put pressure on the rim from different places on the court, not having it all sort of consolidated in Luka. And Luka's more of a slow burn type of driver, whereas, you know, Austin will use his speed attacks. But like Kuminga and then Sexton, even Quentin Grimes, I was at the Philly game last year and he had a massive dunk racking a closeout from the corner. That's something that was very much on the Lakers' mind, is just sort of putting pressure on the rim from different points. And this point about Kuminga being able to draw fouls, I think is spot on.
Yeah, I mean, he's in the 90th percentile relative to his position over the last two seasons. He's been pretty consistent in that and getting his way to the free throw line, which is fantastic. Also means Lakers games would be very, very long putting those guys together, but that's okay. We won't mind as long as the guys are getting to the line and finishing. So yeah, I love the idea of Jonathan Kuminga giving you that different look in terms of free throw ability there. Cammy said, time to move on. Bron was injured and put out that he was monitoring the record, making 35% plus demanding wins without you isn't leadership. Allowing your friend, agent, bash teammates on a pod isn't leadership. Okay, so a lot of stuff, right, in there. And Pete, I've seen a lot of the discourse around LeBron James. A lot of the conversation online, it's so much LeBron stands versus Kobe stands or Lakers stands, whatever, right? All this fighting going back and forth and everybody having to lean into one extreme position or another. And I feel like, you know, like with a lot of things in life, that's not really where the truth of the situation lies. The truth of the situation is somewhere in the middle. That's just not as entertaining. And so people get pushed to these extremes when we see a lot of hot take shows and things like that. People slamming the table for LeBron or slamming the table against LeBron, right? That's more dramatic. But that's also not true when we look at a situation like this. Well, if we want to point fingers, we want to put blame in any one particular position, there's plenty of blame to go around. Should the Lakers front office have done better? Potentially, yeah. Should LeBron have managed things a little bit differently? Yes. Ultimately, Pete, this is where I land. If you don't like LeBron and there's things that you want to be mad about at LeBron about, you're going to find those things. If you're a LeBron stan and you don't like the Lakers and you're mad, how dare they exile him? They didn't prioritize him, all that. If you want to find stuff to be mad about, you're going to find that. Guess what? The Lakers fan base, it's massive and very, very diverse. If you want to find stuff to be mad about, there is plenty of that out there. Just don't look at it and think that's an accurate reflection of the total picture.
I totally agree with this. The one place I'm going to be a little less magnanimous than you is I agree with Cammy here about the having your friend agent bash teammates on the pod, which is not like LeBron sent him out there to be like, you do this. And nor do I think Rich Paul speaks for him in that way, but he is his agent. And so like on some level, he does represent you in a actual literal way that I just don't love the idea of the podcast in the first place. And like, I mean, who am I to judge? I'm a freaking podcaster, right? But I just think that there's a conflict of interest there of having an agent on an active pod that like, I think it's weird, even if it wasn't on my team, you know what I mean? That it's different to me than players having pods and all of that. So that did rub me the wrong way over the course of this season. But your point about like, you're going to find what you want to find. And especially over the course of an 8-year relationship, if you've ever been with somebody for a long period of time, you could always go on the old museum tour of, oh, you remember that thing 3 years ago that you said, or you didn't do. And you can like linger on that if you want to. But for me, like I'm super grateful for LeBron and I wish him well in Philly. I don't have any of that, but I do understand like the perspective of Cammy here of last year was not super comfortable, and especially the point about the Rich Paul pod that rings most true for me.
Yeah, I mean, I just look at Lakers fans being painted with one brush as I see a lot of the LeBron That's fans running around. Lakers fans never accepted LeBron. Lakers fan base has so many differing opinions in it. You can't paint the entire thing with one brush. It's just not the way that it works. Were there people who never really accepted LeBron? Yes, there were those people, but there were also a lot of people who did. And I think we have to remember that too when we look at the whole picture for the situation. But to the point of the Rich Paul podcast, it is, I mean, Bob Myers pitched Rich Paul on the podcast about getting LeBron to join the 76ers, which is odd when you've been saying from day one, oh, I don't, when I'm on the podcast, I don't speak for LeBron. I don't represent LeBron. Like, it's just it's too messy. The lines are getting blurred too much there, and I think that's it creates problems, especially when it gets to the point where you're commenting on trading other players on the team and all that. It's just it's probably not a great spot to be in.
Yeah.
All right, let's go. Long live LF Florida R and Lakers Nation. Pete, are you doing anything to celebrate LFR's 10 years?
Oh man, we should. I think the first episode Darius and I did of the pod was in December of 2016. And then, it's been, I guess I had the anniversary of LFR in May, would have been 10 years of starting that. So apparently not. I was not planning on doing anything for that, but maybe we should. But it's been a fun run, Trev. It's been awesome coming up alongside you, man. And we were talking a couple weeks ago about first time we met over at Spectrum in the TV studio and whatnot. And just crazy to think how far things have come for both of us over that period of time. But yeah, we'll probably do something on the pod celebrating that up in December. But yeah, been a crazy, crazy decade.
It's unbelievable. I had somebody commenting like on one of the shows that I did when I was on vacation. Somebody commented and said, you know, oh man, sucks that you still have to work on your vacation or whatever. And I said, oh man, this is unbelievable to get to do what we do. I mean, when I think back to the very first podcast I ever did, and think about where we're at now, and that we get to talk about this team, not just that we get to talk about basketball, that's a blessing in and of itself, but get to talk about the Lakers, the team we grew up following and loving, and all of that, a true privilege. And it's something that I always just look back and shake my head and smile, because this is it's amazing to get to do this, to get to do what we do.
And all the community that comes along with it, and all the like longtime folks, including Echo, right? Like my girlfriend's a Laker fan. That's how we met, you know, and just my whole world's is Laker fans, you know, at this point.
My wife and I covered that on our first date. Do you like the Lakers? Yes. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Then we're going to be good. No, and I love that you mentioned community. You know, it was such a sad time, but I tell the story a lot, but when Kobe passed, obviously such a very, very difficult time. But as much as I was just talking about a moment ago, as much diversity as we have among Lakers fans, different trains of thought, different ways of looking at things, sometimes bickering and all that kind of stuff that can happen, I was so warmed by how many people reached out to support each other during that moment where it was such a tragic thing, but there was that connectivity to it because everybody was feeling that sadness. And so many fans in the Lakers community reaching out to each other, people who didn't know each other in person, but knew each other online and checking in with each other. How are you doing? How are you processing this? It really is an incredible community.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go here. If Watson says either the qualifying offer or sign and trade me to LA, Denver has no choice. We can add 3 seconds, the swap if needed, a Deuthero. Well, now you'd have to stack up some salaries that Denver probably wouldn't want to take back in a situation where they're sending out Peyton Watson. They would want to cut that tax bill. They would want to cut the amount of money that they have committed here long-term. They are now, as Shams noted yesterday, the lone second apron team currently in the NBA since matching that Spencer Jones contract. So the Lakers and Nuggets in that sense, maybe not ideal trade partners. Maybe you can bring in a third team, though, to help Denver shed a little bit more salary in that type of situation. But Pete, the big hurdle you have to clear here is Peyton Watson has to say it's Lakers or nothing. And as much as it would be great to see that happen from a Lakers perspective, I don't see him narrowing his market in that way. I think right now he had some really good stretches of last season, also had a number of injuries. He's got to be looking at this as his opportunity to secure his long-term future financially. And so I know he's an LA guy and all that. I hope it happens, but I don't think he's exactly in the position that a player would typically be to try to tell a team, no, I will only play for Team X.
Sadly, I agree. And this is, remember, he was a second round pick, I believe. And so he hasn't had that like life-changing contract yet that your point about like limiting your market, it, you know, I very much think that's the case. I would love for this to happen. And I also think there is a world in which he does take the qualifying offer, and Denver's got some real decisions to make, whether it's now or later, because with all of the financial pressures that they have, they also have freaking Nikola Jokic being like, I'm not going to quite sign this extension yet, that I could see them just running it one more year with Watson on the qualifying offer. And if it doesn't work out, it's tear it down, and build it back up type of territory, where letting Watson walk would be less damaging at that point. Like, I think that sort of they need to calibrate everything toward giving one last run with Jokic to see if they can do that. And so that's one of the reasons why, Trev, I'm not sure this gets resolved with Watson until, I mean, Kuminga signed last year under similar circumstances on September 30th, a day or two into training camp. So I don't think there's any pressure there. And I'd love to get Watson, but I'm with you. I think it's very unlikely.
I think it's such a messy situation, because let's say Denver decides to trade Peyton Watson, right? They trade him, they get draft capital right now because they're a second apron team. They can't even take back players. Can't take back salary in a deal, but let's say they get some draft capital. That's a tough spot to be in. But okay, so then you go to Nikola Jokic and you say, all right, Nick, hey, big fella, we just got worse. What are you thinking on that contract extension? We just lost a player. Sign here, big man. They're in a really tough position, because in order for them to have a bit more flexibility, they've got to shed salary. But in order to shed salary, they've got to get rid of players that Nikola Jokic probably wants to play with. if he's going to be with Denver long term. So they're in a very, very difficult spot. I'm fascinated to see ultimately how they negotiate this. Maybe it does wind up being a one-year qualifying offer, but I think if you are Denver, you're trying to hope that Peyton Watson ultimately will take whatever they're offering to him. Right now, the report is that it's 4 years, about $70 million. And I think they're hoping that at some point he'll say, I'm not going to risk. I get my hamstring injured a couple times again next season, and then my market's really in trouble in 2027. I'll take $70 million today rather than play for 6.5 and risk it. Look, sometimes playing on the qualifying offer works. Worked with Quentin Grimes, right? He got a big long-term deal with the Lakers. Didn't work so well for Cam Thomas, did he? He's not even in the NBA right now. Crazy. So there are cautionary tales out there. I think Denver's going to try to squeeze him a little bit. But ultimately, if you're Peyton Watson and you had the season you had last year, I get why he'd be looking at the Nuggets roster and saying, well, I shouldn't be making less than Christian Brown. Like, come on, guys.
I was just going to say that.
Yep. Let's figure this out.
Yep, exactly.
So I hope things do work out with him, but it may take a little while for that to ultimately happen with Denver. They're in a really tough spot right now. I miss Ocean View, T-Lane. Me too, man.
Indeed.
Me too. Although, I don't know. Pete, have you done cruising?
I've never gone on a cruise before. I have like motion sickness pretty bad on stuff like that. Is it big enough to like, do you feel that on the boat? Like the rocking?
A little bit. There are certain times where you do. You do feel it a little. It's not constant. And the bigger the ship you're on, it seems to be the less you notice it. But there were some times where I could feel it a little bit. But I did see a lot of people wearing like the motion sickness patches that go like behind their ear, something like that. A lot of people were wearing those. But I'll tell you, but we were gone for a week. But when you get towards the end of it, you get to a point where I'm like, okay, I need to get back to normal life at this point. I need to get back on land, but it is absolutely a blast. And I certainly can't complain about the view. That made a perfect background. People were asking me if it was like CGI or something like that. No, I just had that great of a view. It was awesome. It was awesome. I feel the Watson domino falls before we know where Kuminga goes. Thoughts? That's
kind of where I'm at too, is that because the Watson if they sign Watson to say a $20 million contract, that adds, you know, 100 million or so in penalties. I don't know the exact number, but there's no way they're going to pay that much. And so they're going to have to shed either Brown or Johnson. I don't think they can go into the season paying that much in taxes. And so that, like, the resolution of that, I think, would sort of leave Kuminga as the last man standing, which could be beneficial or not, but I do see it in sort of in this light. Do you?
Yeah, I do think it could potentially play out that way. If you're Jonathan Kuminga right now, you know what's on the table. I mean, what's the rush? As long as you don't think that offer is going to go elsewhere, you know, the money, if the Lakers are willing to give, you know, 15 to 16 million per year or something like that, and you think that's your floor and you could sign that a month from now as opposed to right now, you might as well wait and see what the market develops and see what ultimately happens. What happens if the Nuggets becomes known that they're not moving Cam Johnson, or if they do move Cam Johnson and he's truly like the last wing that's out there available, maybe that's ultimately where this lands. And then if you're Jonathan Kuminga, you can cash in on that scarcity a little bit. But again, I think some of it's going to have to do with Atlanta, but some of it also is, I'd say, I want players to get paid. I want players to get paid what they think they're worth and all of that. But I think he does have to get realistic about what his actual market value is. And if he wants more than that, then show it. Then prove you're worth that. And the best opportunity to do that would be in LA.
Absolutely.
Check this out. Fantasy 4-team trade. Okay. Denver. I'm assuming it's Terrence Mann plus picks. The Lakers get Watson. Brooklyn gets Bronny and Patrick Williams for Terrence Mann. Okay. Chicago gets Christian Brown and Dalton Connect. So we're just out on PJ. Okay. So we'll get to that second part, but essentially this is everybody swapping around bad contracts. Christian Brown, Pat Williams, Dalton Connect going out. I don't know that he's a bad contract, but you got all these Terrence Mann, you got all these bad contracts moving about, and then the Lakers sneaking in there and winding up with Peyton Watson. I don't know if I see the motivation for the other clubs here to do something like this. Like, if you're Denver, does this solve your salary issue enough where you're saying, okay, the picks that we get are worth the price difference between what Peyton Watson is going to get and what Mann is getting right now. I just don't know. I would like to say the Lakers are going to wind up with getting Watson, but I don't know if I see this for the other teams involved.
Yeah, like maybe Chicago getting Christian Brown makes some sense to me, but yeah. Like Brooklyn trades a bad contract for a worse contract at the benefit of getting Bronny as well. And so between that and then Denver, like I said, they've got to think fairly short term right now in terms of whatever move they make that is cutting salary also has to bring back a player that's good enough to look where you can look Jokic in the eye and be like, hey, we're still competitive or we've gotten better. That I think, you know, Brown, despite not having a great year this year, is a better player than Mann is at this point. And so I know picks are valuable to Denver, but not as valuable as short-term as guys who can play right now.
Right. Look, I know Jokic has said everything that he needs to say to give Denver confidence that he'll stay. He's talked about wanting to be a Denver Nugget for his entirety of his career, that he wants to do the new deal next summer so that he can still be earning a max salary at age 37, which maybe that'll look interesting at that point. But nonetheless, you still have to be nervous if you're Denver, because regardless of whether or not he's saying all the right things, the fact remains Nikola Jokic is an unrestricted free agent or has the ability to be an unrestricted free agent next summer. That's a scary, scary situation to be in. If you go to Jokic, you say, hey, we lost Peyton Watson, who kind of helped keep us afloat when we dealt with a bunch of injuries over the course of the season, and we got you some draft picks and a guy that's a negative value on his contract, I don't think that's going to go over real well.
Yeah, and you lose Brown in this as well with just Terrence Mann coming back.
Yeah, losing Brown as well. I still think, you know, I think that Christian Brown very well could have a bounce back year. It's just that he's got the 5 years under contract that makes it a little tough right now. But there's a decent, you know, the three ball comes back around, and I think he's going to be just fine. I understand why teams wouldn't want to take that gamble right now. But that's the other piece to this. If you're Denver, do you want to sell Christian Brown at today's price if you feel like last year was an outlier and he's going to be worth more if you just have a little bit of patience? That's the other thing I think you have to look at. If you're Denver and you're, I know he's the guy that we point to as the guy they should try to move. And maybe there's still something to that. But if I'm Denver, I also think, you know, there's a real chance that his value is higher, maybe not through the roof, but significantly higher come trade deadline time if the three ball and his play really come back around.
Yeah, they'd be selling low if they traded him now.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Okay, everybody. Well, hey, I want to say we appreciate all of you for joining the show today. If you haven't done so yet, please hit that subscribe button. Of course, we'll be keeping an eye on things as the Lakers continue to build out this roster. I don't think they're done. In fact, I know they're not done because they have 16 players under contract right now. At some point, they're going to have to do something with that. But we'll stay on top of everything here on the Lakers Collective. We'll be back later on in the week with a second show. But Pete, so much fun talking Lakers basketball with you here today.
Love it, man. Let's do it again and welcome back.
Thanks. Happy to be back. I know you're going to be out a little later this week when you're completing your big move. It is the season for this kind of stuff. We'll be coming and going, the three of us, but happy to be here talking hoops with you. All right, everybody. Till next time. See ya and stay safe.